Good evening, and this is Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. You're listening to Stark Raven. We take a closer look at prisons and criminalization around the world. My name's Tiffany, and I'm going to be your host for this evening. Coming up on Stark Raven, we bring you highlights from Vancouver's Prison Justice Day rally, and we'll also be featuring music by Billy Bragg tonight because we have free tickets to give away for his upcoming concert in Vancouver. So stay tuned. A quiet and attentive crowd gathered around the Claire Culhane Memorial Bench last Thursday. This bench is in Trout Lake Park, and it's placed there to honor the memory of one of Canada's most cherished prisoner rights activists. Prisoners, activists, and passers-by stopped by to listen to the many stories told by the speakers that evening. They were there to remember the more than 1,000 prisoners that have died inside Canadian prisons. Phyllis Iverson of the Vancouver Prison Justice Day Committee started the evening off by telling the story of how Prison Justice Day began.
1974 is when Eddie Nalon died in solitary confinement in Mill Haven Prison. And Eddie was a lifer, and he had been on a working unit in the prison. He wanted to transfer to a non-working unit. And one of the guards had told him the only way he could get his transfer was to sign a refusal to work. And in prison, it's illegal to not work. So when he signed off on that paper, they put him into solitary confinement. And as a lifer, he knew that, you know, under punitive segregation, he would do 30 days in the hole. And he did his 30 days and was expecting to be released from the hole. He had gone before the Segregation Review Board. The Review Board had decided to release him back into general population, but nobody told him. And on August the 9th, when he wasn't let out of the hole, he slashed in protest. And Mill Haven was a relatively new prison at the time. They had put in emergency call buttons in every one of those seg cells so that if there was a problem, prisoner could push the button and alert the guards. He pushed his button and no guards came. Other prisoners pressed their buttons, no guards came, and Eddie ended up bleeding to death in that cell. On the first anniversary of his death, prisoners at Mill Haven went on one-day fast because the recommendations that had been made at the coroner's inquest had not been carried out, such as the repair of those buttons, repair of the time clocks, and maybe about 6 months after that, another prisoner died in solitary in those same cells. His name was Bobby Landers, and he had been transferred to Mill Haven and put into solitary confinement. Unlike Eddie, who had been in there for punitive segregation, Bobby Landers was in solitary for administrative segregation. He had been at Archambault and was on the inmate committee and had been struggling there for better conditions in that prison. He was transferred to Mill Haven, put in the hole, and he started getting chest pains. He pushed this button, put in requests to see the nurse, and nobody came down to see him. He died of heart complications. And so on August 10th, 1976, prisoners at Mill Haven put out a call for prisoners across the country to go on a one-day fast and work stoppage to draw attention to conditions inside Canadian prisons and also to remember the men and women who have died inside. So this is, I guess that was like 30 years ago when the first rally was held right across the country, National Prison Justice Day. And so today we're here on the site of the Claire Culhane Memorial Bench, and Claire was one of the organizers of the first Community Prison Justice Day out at BC Penn in 1976. This is the banner that was at that rally, and there's been an outside event every year. In Canada, well, I guess for the last recorded year, 181 prisoners died in Canadian prisons, and that's in the adult prison system. I don't know how many youth have died because they don't report those numbers. But so even though it's been 30 years and there's been a lot of gains made in the prisoners' rights movement, there's still a long way to go. There's a lot of issues. And so today we're going to have very many people coming up to speak of those issues.
That was Phyllis Iverson of the Vancouver Prison Justice Day Committee. Brenda is a former prisoner who now works with Strength in Sisterhood. It's a group that advocates for women in prison, and she was one of the other speakers at Thursday's rally.
He had been on a working
When I was in Kingston, I was there for 18 years altogether on the last bit. We had so many women that came in and they were, you know, yeah, they were shit disturbers, but so what? They, you know, they were good people. And I sat and watched as actually 9 of them died in total. Not from anybody else's hand except the CSC, and I hold the CSC responsible. You know, the work that Claire did, I'm sure, stopped many people from ending their lives. And her work has carried on. I know people that, you know, would be dead. My husband would probably be dead now if it hadn't have been for Claire. And I have a poem here I'd just like to read. It's a short one. It's called Lady Bic. I sit in my 6x8-foot room with its sanitary stark white walls, holding my Lady Bic razor, which is broken in two. It's my Bic. I don't own much, but I own this razor. I bought it at Canteen with the money I make working here in prison. I sit and I think about everything, about nothing. Does any of it really matter? And to who? Not to me, not to you probably either. Someone once said to me, "You have so much to live for." When I ask what, there was no answer. Just a saccharine smile and empty words, "Things will look better tomorrow." That's pure bullshit. I've spent an eon of tomorrows, and they have been, with a few exceptions, as empty as a sterile room that I now call home. I don't have any emotions. I want to cry, but I can't. I want to scream and shout, rant and rave, but I can't. Am I already dead? Maybe. I take my razor blade and slowly and firmly pull it across my left wrist. My flesh parts, and I look into a gaping wound. Oh, the mysteries of the human body. Tendons, fat cells, veins, all exposed for you to see in living color. Blood red spurting, hot, wet, blood red color. I do it again and again and again until my hand becomes tired and I switch to the other arm. The blood makes my razor so slippery. I lay down and I covered myself up with my bedspread that a once upon time lover gave me. As I lay there, I'm no longer angry. I smile to myself, calm now, and holding my teddy bear tight, think, yeah, you're right, maybe tomorrow will be better.
That was Brenda with Strength in Sisterhood, and she was reading a poem by a prisoner. Eddie Rouse is a lifer who spends much of his time assisting prisoners. He works with the New Page Foundation and sits on the board of the West Coast Prison Justice Society. Eddie says he's seen a lot of changes to laws and legislation in the last 30 years, and some of these recent changes don't bode well for prisoners or society.
One of the things that really concerns me right now is this law and order agenda of Stephen Harper. If you look at the United States, he went on the law and order kick a few years ago, and they put in the three strikes and you're out law. Well, what ended up happening there is the several states who enacted that backed away from it rather quickly because they discovered that they had to probably build three prisons every couple of years to house the people that were getting thrown in jail because they broke they fell under that three strikes and you're out law. Here in Canada, the federal government under Stephen Harper is pushing Bill C-10 and C-9, which is calling for a mandatory minimum sentencing. Bill C-10 deals with crimes with and don't let the guns thing fool you. That has already been expanded to include any kind of weapon that is used in a crime or perceived weapon. So looking at people getting charged with some minor crime, if a weapon's involved, they get an automatic, what they're calling for is 3 to 10 year mandatory sentence for that particular crime, whether it, and it doesn't matter how serious it is or how minor it is. So that's only going to serve to fill up the prison system that's already overtaxed at this point. And the taxpayers of this country are going to be paying for new construction and new prisons. The Bill C-9 deals with the conditional sentencing, where a person, most people do not need to be in jail. There are very few people that actually need to be in jail. You have to, if the problems that led them into the prison system, poverty, drug addiction, the abuse that they grew up with were addressed, they could circumvent that system and get out of the crime cycle. And the with this Bill C-9 and taking away that the judge's option of using conditional sentencing for that, that serves to force the judges to put people who shouldn't be in jail into the prison system.
That was Eddie Rouse, and you're listening to Stark Raven on Vancouver Co-op Radio. On tonight's show, we have highlights from Vancouver's Prison Justice Day rally in Trout Lake Park. Larry Howitt is one of the speakers from the rally. He works with LINC, or long-term inmates, now in the community.
I just finished a 30-year prison term. I finished about 10 or 12 months ago. I've been out for 6 years, and I work with an organization called LINC. Most of my colleagues are lifers. We go back into institutions, and we work with colleagues and friends, and we try and get them on the right track to get out of prison and stay out of prison. And basically, when you talk about banning prisons, you can't even sell that one on me. There's some people that just have to be in prison, but most of the people that are in prisons today don't have to be there, and that's the real truth. The fact is that a lot of people in there are just property offenders. Probably 70 or 80% of the people in there are drug addicts, and there's a huge, huge issue with harm reduction these days. There's been huge gains made, and that's good. I'm happy about that, and I'm happy to see people in there getting treatment, heroin addicts being given methadone so that they don't have to sit and go cold turkey and spend every waking minute of every day trying to secure a drug supply in there. In Matsqui, when I was there for all the years I did in Matsqui, and I did well over 25 years in Matsqui, which is a medium security prison, 9 men were murdered when I was there. People were killed over a watch, never mind drugs. They were killed over nothing but jealousy, petty things, little things. Idle minds cause people to do crazy things. Prisons are a dangerous place, there's no doubt of that. But you know what? They're a lot more dangerous when people have nothing to do and no hope. And that's what people like Claire Culhane and LINC and people like me are all about. It's trying to bring hope into those places. Because in this country, they build prisons way over there. Way over where the public can't get to them. Where the public can't get inside. And it's the public scrutiny, and it's people like you that could cause change, that can talk to the people to get people in there, that can volunteer. You can do things about it. It's wonderful to see you here, and it's wonderful to see activists and people like Claire Culhane. They got down there and they did it. They didn't just talk about it. They did it. They went there. They volunteered. They did things. And there's things that everybody here can do to help people. When I was asked to go back into Matsqui and work for them, when I got out, I went to work for a law firm. That's another story. But and I was asked to go back in and work with the men that I had done 30 years with. I was like, Jesus, can I walk back through the door of that place? Can I walk into a place where I watched dozens of people die? You want to talk about death? 15 years ago, a friend of mine did up a list of people that didn't make it in Matsqui alone. There was 223 names on that list. 223 men that died. 200 men. I could easily add another 150 names to that list. Out of all of those people, few of them died of natural causes. Almost every one of them died of suicide, disease, overdose, murder. This is the reality, but it doesn't have to be that way. There used to be a university program in there to educate people. Not anymore. There used to be trades in there to educate people, to give them a skill when they get out so that they can have a new start. Not anymore. There's nothing. There's idle boredom. Oh, there's programs and redundant drug programs and stuff like that. And there's nothing wrong with those. They're fine. They're great. But you know what? If a person does every program there is to do in the federal system, they can have them all done in a year and a half. But the reality of today is that they're not doing a year and a half sentence. They're doing 15 years or 20 years or 30 years. I went to a parole hearing for a fellow 3 months ago. He's been in for 37 years. He has never been out. He's been out on escorted passes half a dozen times in 37 years. He's maintained his innocence. I don't know if he's innocent or guilty, but I know this. 37 years is a long time to contemplate whether or not this man is a risk to society. He's an old man. He's probably going to die in there because his kidneys are bad now. But that's the reality. When you hear people like Randy White get up and talk about all these lifers that get out in 7 years, I've never met that guy. I did 30 years inside, and I've never met a lifer who got a life sentence and got out in 7 years. That person doesn't exist. Most lifers do 15 or 20 years before they get out. And they certainly aren't even eligible for a minimum of 10 years, because in Canada, you're not eligible for a minimum of 10 years. The real truth is that women in this province have always got the short shrift in corrections. There hasn't even been a place for federal women to do time in this province until about 18 months ago. If a woman in British Columbia got a federal sentence, they had to leave their family, they had to leave their children and their loved ones and go to another province to do their time, or they had to sign their rights away and do it in a provincial institution where they had no rights. At least in federal institutions, you have some rights, and they're growing, and that's good too. There's still lots of room for improvement. The fact is that every time I get up and look in the mirror these days and I ask myself, am I okay? I think about people like Claire Culhane. And I think about people like you who come to events like this to at least give some type or kind of poignancy and meaning to the real truth. And the truth is that prisons are bad places. And most people that are incarcerated today could do well in the community if the government would spend a third of what it costs to incarcerate a person for a year in reintegration back into the community. Most people would succeed because they would have something to work with to do so. The sad truth is they don't. They leave it to people like me to work with them when they get out. And we help a lot of people, and a lot of other people I see here do the same. And God bless you all, because you're really important. And I just want to thank all of you for being here again. And, you know, we have to keep fighting the good fight, because it's about people like you, and it's about talking to your communities and doing things and getting involved. And there's lots of volunteer work that could be done. Everybody here could go out and get involved in some kind of volunteer work with offenders. It's easy to do. All you have to do is have the heart and the mind and ask yourself what's more important, because the fact is everybody gets out. And that's what the public has to really, really ask themselves. What kind of person do they want getting out? A person who is completely institutionalized and alienated from society for 20 or 30 years? Or do you want a person getting out that has had some opportunity to get out with some kind of a skill, to get out with some kind of hope? Because that's what is really important, is that we have to keep hope.
That was Larry Howitt of Link speaking to the group that was gathered on Thursday evening at Trout Lake Park for Prison Justice Day. Angelette Sterrett works with Justice for Girls. She's been helping young Indigenous women in BC's youth jail.
I guess I want to talk briefly about the experience of girls in prison, and in particular Indigenous girls in prison. I guess about 6 years ago, we heard from a girl inmate that that when they would go into the sweat lodge, they would be cuffed by the ankles before they'd crawl in, and we found that pretty disturbing and started looking into if that was true or not. Well, not if it was true, but if there was, if that was actually a policy in place, that that was actually happening. And it took us a long time to figure out that it was a policy and that it indeed was mandatory for every single youth before they went into the sweat lodge to pray that they would have to be shackled by iron leg restraints by each ankle. And every single youth would have to do this, even though there was a screening process to even enter the sweat lodge program, whereby any youth that had previous violent behavior or had tried to escape in the past would not be able to go to that program, into the sweat lodge. And so it took a long time for us to even figure out that the prison was run by MCFD, Ministry of Children and Family Development, and that they were the ones that had actually implemented this policy. And it took a long time for us to be able to actually have a meeting with them and actually get them to address that this was an extreme human rights violation. And they had justified it in so many ways, saying at least they get access to the sweat lodge, at least they're able to access their culture and this kind of thing. And also, we tried to get into the prison today because, like Phyllis said, we'd started up a youth and elders council because of that, because of the human rights violations, and they just never got back to us. So that's another thing that we see a lot with the youth, is that things that the adult prisoners have access to, like people coming in on Prison Justice Day, the youth would never see that. Basically, we fought really hard to get public pressure on the prison to get them to remove the shackles and stop the spiritual torture of the Indigenous youth and actually start trying to free them from that kind of oppression. And it took us about a year to actually get them to remove the policy, but they finally removed that.
Angela Sterrett works with Justice for Girls. This is Stark Raven on Vancouver Co-op Radio. We are featuring highlights from last Thursday's Prison Justice Day rally. Now, we heard lots of stories about the injustice that occurs inside Canadian prisons. Terry Howard has been recording prisoner stories to present at this week's International AIDS Conference in Toronto. Terry is the Prison Outreach Coordinator with BC's Persons with AIDS Society.
While I was preparing for the International AIDS Conference starting early next week, I'm doing a presentation there in Toronto, and I'm presenting on Inside Voices Speak Out, which is going to be the words of inmates across the country that are living with HIV/AIDS in prison and hepatitis, and giving their experiences of what they live with and the treatment that they receive while they're in prison. And some of the things that were gathered were actual voice recordings of inmates that have dealt with different issues on the inside. And I plan to present them. And some of them were fairly horrific that they still happen in this day and age. One of the most poignant was an inmate in Ontario in a federal prison who is now actually dying, but had been to healthcare several times complaining that he wasn't able to swallow and he wasn't able to eat. And he was labeled by healthcare as a nuisance, and they kept putting him off, and they canceled his appointments with the institution doctor on several occasions. So, a couple of months went by, and finally, when he wasn't able to actually eat and he started to lose weight, they let him see an outside doctor. They took him to a specialist, and they found that he had advanced esophageal cancer. The doctor on the outside said that they had rarely seen a case that had gotten so progressive and that he was now beyond treatment. So he's looking forward to dying most likely be a very painful and agonizing death by choking in prison because his tumors are not treatable now. This isn't Guantanamo Bay we're talking about. This isn't Iraq we're talking about. These are prisons in Canada. And unfortunately, there are still staff and healthcare people that just pass off information that they're given and inmates as complainers and then totally disregard them. when Maywin and I were out last month visiting an inmate at the Regional Treatment Center here in BC, we were told in confidence at the time that this inmate had been raped while he was in Mission Institution, that the inmate that he was bunking with there had made several unwanted sexual advances and then subsequently was drugged with sleeping pills that the inmate had stolen and raped. And unfortunately, during the act of the rape, the guards caught them, the two inmates, having sex and banged on the door, and their response was to tell them to break it up and get back to your own bunk, and then went back to their post. And obviously, in his drug state, the inmate that was being raped wasn't able to call the guards or report it. The next morning, he said when he got up and he was going to report this, that the incident had happened, it was two female guards that were on duty on his range, and he was far too embarrassed to actually go to the guards and tell them at that time. So the first person that he had told was a little more than a month later, when May and I went to visit him, and he confessed at that time that this had occurred. He's now waiting until he gets out of prison, probably next week, the week after, to make a formal complaint because of fear of repercussion for him complaining about being raped in prison. That's the situation that we have here. We're not talking about some abstract idea. People, men and women, are being systematically abused, and heinous crimes are being committed in prison that are going unannounced, and no one's been reporting them.
That was Terry Howard of the BC Persons with AIDS Society. You're listening to Stark Raven on Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, and this is our special highlights from the Prison Justice Day rally that happened in Vancouver last Thursday. Coming up now, we've just got a song by a British musician and a folk punk rocker and activist who will be performing in Vancouver in September. It's Billy Bragg.
Party that became so powerful by sinking foreign boats is dreaming up new promises, 'cause promises win votes. Being resolute in conference, the ad man's expertise, the majority by their silence should pay for days like these. Right to build communities is back behind closed doors. Between government and people stands the right arm of the law. And shame upon the patriot when the mark of the bulldog breed is a family without a home and a pensioner in need. Those whose lives are ruled by dogma are waiting for a sign. The better dead than Red Brigade are listening on the line. And a liberal with a small L cries in front of the TV. And another demonstration passes on to history. Peace, bread, work and freedom is the best we can achieve. And wearing badges is not enough in days like these.
And that was Billy Bragg, who's going to be playing in Vancouver in September. So stay tuned, because you can win a pair of tickets on tonight's show of Stark Raven. Now, we've been playing excerpts tonight from the Prison Justice Day rally that happened in Trout Lake Park last Thursday. And we've heard a lot about the emotional and physical costs of prisons. But prisoner rights activist Phyllis Iverson, also gave us the lowdown on what it costs taxpayers to keep people in prison.
For the last reported fiscal year, the corrections budget in Canada was $2.7 billion. And once you add into that number policing and the courts, it's $11 billion a year. And that money looks like it's going to be going up with announcements made to build more prison cells for the anticipated increase in prisoner population. So even though actual crime rates across the country are down, prisoner populations are increasing through prisoners on remand and people in on security certificates. And when we break down that cost for a federal prisoner, it costs just over $87,000 a year per prisoner to keep them in prison. And for federally sentenced women, because there's fewer of them, that cost is between $150,000 and $250,000 a year per prisoner. I realized when I was talking about the cost of incarceration, I didn't talk about the cost of provincial incarceration. And right now that's sitting at $141 a day per prisoner in every provincial prison, lockup, jail. And when we look at the numbers that are there, it's growing all of the time. One more thing that is going to happen to increase the number of provincial prisoners in this province is that BC is one of three provinces in the country that has its own parole board for provincial prisoners. It's called the BC Board of Parole. And it's just been announced that in the spring 2007, the provincial parole board is going to turn that jurisdiction over to the federal parole, so to the National Parole Board. And for provincial prisoners, that means that because the timelines for parole application on the national level is longer than for provincial parole right now, more provincial prisoners are going to be doing longer sentences or more of their sentence. So anybody who, you know, may have been able to put in for parole after 3 months serving time is now going to have that extended by double. And so with the provincial prisons in BC, they're already double bunked and overcrowded. We just heard from North Fraser Pretrial Center today. All the prisoners there fasted in honor of Prison Justice Day. It was the pretrial center was built to hold 300 and some odd prisoners. They're up to 600 prisoners in that lockup right now. And those numbers are projected to increase to where maybe by next year they'll be triple bunking right across BC.
That was Phyllis Iverson, and she's a prisoner rights activist in Vancouver. Author and scholar Carlene Faith has been involved with Prison Justice Day rallies in Vancouver since the first. She says that she's felt discouraged over the years by the multiplying prisons and the political climate supporting prisons. But she says that she recently had a revelation.
What came to me were 8 events that have occurred over the past year, and each time one of these events was there for me to witness or experience or learn about, I found myself again, yes, we can do this. Yes, we can continue this. Yes, we can carry on as if we truly believe, as in fact I think we do, on some very fundamental and very deep level, that we can not only change the world in the larger parameters, we can not only establish laws that make certain that everyone knows they have human rights, that the Charter does have, in fact, some meaning, that women, in fact, do not have to be subjugated to men, that men do not have to be subjugated by bosses who will exploit them without any kind of check or balance on their behaviors. Yes, we don't have to tolerate slavery. No, we don't have to accept racism as fundamental to human life. We can, in fact, enlighten ourselves, and we can, in fact, enlighten the world, bit by bit, word by word, gesture by gesture, and conviction by conviction. And I don't mean the kind of conviction that results in the joint. I mean the kind of conviction that results in actions and strategies at every single level of this society. So what are these eight events that caused me to raise my hopes so high? I'm going to read them to you very quickly right now. I'd like to qualify that very quickly. I can't promise that. As quickly as I can do it. Thanks to the Elizabeth Fry Society's leadership and to the many women's organizations that so fully cooperated with them, in particular people like Gail Horry and others who are on these grounds right now, the Canadian Human Rights Commission agreed in this past year that yes, in fact, women's rights in Canadian prisons are being abused. Yes, this is a human rights abuse. This is a crisis. This cannot continue. Does it continue? Does Correctional Services Canada ignore judgments like those of the Human Rights Commission? Sure they do. Sure they ignore those admonitions to clean up their act. But does that mean that we have wasted all this time getting that judgment? Absolutely not. We're raising the bar higher every single year, and there are more and more reasons to believe that we can one day actually succeed in getting government agencies to obey the law. A second event. This was a more intimate one that happened out at the Fraser Valley Institute. I was very privileged to go along with Phyllis and Christine and many others when Kim Pate came to town to tell the women in that prison why it was that they should have some hope about having human rights while incarcerated. It was a beautiful experience to sit in that circle with all these women filling the gymnasium and watching their faces brighten as they were told, you have the right to file a grievance when this happens to you or that. They looked, some of them, completely startled to think that they would actually have a voice within a cage. And they do have a voice. They have a right to a voice, and there are protections awaiting them if their rights are trampled. And it's our responsibility as advocates for those women to ensure that their voice will not be stifled as it has been for 200 years in prisons. A third experience happened very recently, and in fact there's going to be a rapid now listing of these six events that happened just in the past 2 weeks within my life. The first was that I had the privilege, which at first I thought was dubious, because it sounded like the privilege of engaging with the privileged, which doesn't interest me very much. I'm not so interested in people who sit in silk suits in fancy offices and make decisions about what would be a nice sounding policy. This, it turned out, was 14 women who are truly active and who are truly committed. Actually, it was 12 women and 2 men, but they were men with feminine hearts, I'll tell you. They were such lovable men that I wasn't thinking gender after about 10 minutes. The 14 of us sat there and hashed out all the examples we could collectively summon having to do with the degree to which medical practices in prisons are human rights abuses. People were eloquent, people were committed with one another to the work, to activist work when they go home, to networking with all the other organizations all across the globe, not just in the Western world. And together we came up with some, I think, really solid recommendations. Now, they would be meaningless if it was just one other of hundreds and thousands of meetings that take place in countries all over the world. It didn't feel meaningless because every single person there has a voice bigger than any one of us by ourselves could ever have. Collectively, those voices amounted to something. And what it amounted to was that there was a very quick consensus among us that prisons do have to be abolished. That it is bizarre that in this stage of history, we are still allowing the kinds of abuses that are inevitable if you give one class of persons, a unionized class of persons, the power to have complete control over another class of persons. It is simply an imbalance, an aesthetic that is so distasteful to the human eye and senses that it is inevitably going to be abusive, and it is inevitably going to be a setback for any society that recommits itself to that. We have to stop that cycle. While I was in Italy and while we were talking about how does one really strategically, concretely persuade a frightened, fearful public that loves to stereotype the so-called criminal? How do we persuade that society that enough is enough is enough, that corporate interests be damned, that we have human rights to take care of in this world before we think about anything else, including the environment, certainly, as a human right, and that we have to focus on the health of this world before we start thinking in terms of who now do we segregate and for what purpose. We've got to get on an equal plane here, all of us. And while there, talking about abolishing prisons, the most miraculous thing happened just overnight. The Italian government, and we're sitting there in Italy, decided that they were going to release 12,000 prisons beginning that day. They changed it from 12,000 to 15,000 prisoners to be released immediately. I expect they are all by now out. The press in Italy showed photographs of one person after another walking out of the prison, being met by family, the laughter, the joy, the babies hugging their fathers, the children clinging to their mother's legs. These are men and women who pose no danger to that society, and their government has recognized the injustices and the impracticalities and the embarrassment on a human level of locking people up in order to provide jobs for a whole lot of other people to keep them locked up. And they're out. This has happened. This is in our lifetime, and I feel as though I have been in a dream for the last week, but in fact, this actually happened. This is real life and a real story. Simultaneously with that, the Howard League, the John Howard Society, has the Howard League in England, and they came out with a very clear statement that we have to close down every woman's prison in England. Now, how about that? This has just happened in the past week. You see, folks, we are not just idiots. We are not just idealists. We are part of an international wave of consciousness that is coming to the fore, that is telling all of us, you are not an idiot. You are not an idealist. You are a practical person who wants justice and balance in this world. I then come home to Canada and get the great news that our friend Betty Krajicek has been released. And not only has she been released, but the judge has been very clear that the previous judges have been illegal in their decisions, where her case and that of all the other environmentalists are concerned. You see, enlightenment can find its way even into the courts. The seventh thing that caused me great hope is that I received, as we do every year, if we happen to be on their email list, the notice from the Justice Action Committee. I think it was August 10th yesterday in Australia, wasn't it? I believe. Here's their media release. It's not going to surprise you with anything, because it's just like the media release that we all get privy to because Phyllis does her work. And here's what they say. International Prisoners Justice Day. Today on International Prisoners Justice Day, the Jail Free Act warned that the planned 130 million jail would lead to more crime, fear of terrorism and racism like that seen at other prisons. The proposed jail will only expand the prison industry, with paid service providers leading the charge for the new jail. Prisoners and the advocacy organizations have been cut out of the consultation process. Jails are a festering sore on the community. Authorities use racial clustering as a way of controlling prisoners, separating them from each other rather than learning community development skills. Jails breed fear of terrorism. A recent Australian Federal Police seminar opened by the Attorney General Philip Ruddock heard that Richard Reed, the English shoe bomber, was trained in radical Islam while in jail for petty offenses. Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the late Iraq al-Qaeda leader, was also schooled in radical Islam while in jail. The Stanhope Slammer will cost nearly $1 million. It will divert needed funds from schools, hospital, and housing. It will increase crime and racism and the fear of terrorism in the community. The International Prisoners Justice Day marks the anniversary of the death of Eddie Nolan, a prisoner who bled to death in a solitary confinement unit at a Canadian maximum security prison when the emergency call button in his cell failed to work. An inquest later found that the guards had deactivated his cell button. The following year, prisoners marked the anniversary of Eddie's death by fasting and refusing to work. By May 1976, the call buttons had not been repaired. What started as a one-time event behind the walls of Millhaven Prison has become an international day of solidarity. And that is really the joy for me of this work, is that we are truly an international movement. We are truly a movement of solidarity. And finally, what is the eighth reason that I am so happy? The eighth reason why I keep my hopes up? That reason is this gathering, this year and every year. It's each one of you that I'm looking at out there, my friends, my family, really, in so many ways, the people who make life truly meaningful for me by demonstrating in every way they can. We believe in justice for me, for you, for everyone. This gathering is truly the evidence that we have no reason at all to be pessimistic. May Claire Culhane, and one day all of us, rest in peace and justice.
And that was Carlene Faith speaking at the Prison Justice Day rally last Thursday in Trout Lake Park. Now, life in prison can be hard for everyone, especially if the prisoners don't speak English or haven't even been charged with a crime. Mandeep from the group No One Is Illegal spoke about immigration detention at the rally.
Migration is a human right. Migrating because of economic, social, or political injustice is a human right. But in Canada, as in all Western nations that are closed by racist colonial borders, migration is treated as a punishable offense. And we know this because immigration and refugees laws in Canada have historically been presented as being part of a security strategy, not to support and protect those who have felt a need to leave their own lands and homes, but to keep them out, and to justify this by creating an atmosphere where all of us with brown skin are possible terrorists or criminals. Detention and deportation have historically in Canada been used not only to keep undesirables out when their labor was not required in Canada, but also to create a system which is harsh, frightening, and virtually impossible to navigate, a system which, like the criminal justice system, is supposed to deter. And we know that the immigration system is a system of punishment, just as Canadian consciousness, mainstream Canadian consciousness, falsely links the disproportionate imprisonment of Indigenous peoples and racial minorities to criminal behavior. This criminalization of refugees and immigrants is seen as a needed consequence of quote-unquote terrorist freeloading and dishonest behavior of people who don't share quote-unquote Canadian values. At any given moment, by Citizenship and Immigration Canada's own numbers, about 500 people are in detention in Canada. But knowing that the turnover rate is incredibly high, the actual numbers of those who are detained are much higher. Around 10,000 asylum seekers have, at some point in the process, been detained by Canadian immigration for a time period ranging anywhere from 48 hours to 18 months. This includes about 20 minors who are detained at any given moment as well. It includes children who are detained to force their parents out of hiding. It includes immigrants and refugees who are held in maximum security prisons such as the Metro Toronto West Detention Center, where approximately one quarter of the prison population is made up of immigrants and refugees who don't have any criminal charges against them. For those passing through the immigration system in Canada, detention and deportation are a reality at any point in their process. Despite the wide recognition that refugees fleeing unstable conditions often do not carry valid identification for obvious reasons, questionable identity can get you detained at any point in the process since 2002 in Canada. If you object in any capacity to being deported, including expressing the fear that most of us probably can't even imagine, you can be detained at any point in the process for being seen as a flight risk. You can be detained for administrative convenience so that an officer can finish their interview. If you're deemed to be a risk to national security, you can be detained for days to months to years, as many have been, without knowing exactly what charges or what evidence is being used against you, and no access to an open trial. This quickly expanding security regime post 9/11 has meant that racism in Canada has once again found legitimacy on grounds of an ever elusive national security. Stripping the absolute rights of particular groups has been sold as necessary to protect the fiber of a supposed democratic society. Even prior to 9/11, there had been increasing integration between immigration in Canada and CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, the RCMP, local, provincial, and municipal police forces, and the Correctional Services of Canada. People are criminalized for migrating to Canada. Just as the ways in which the prison system has ripped into Indigenous communities and communities of color and has ensured their fragmentation, the immigration and refugee systems have obviously targeted people from the third world in their arbitrary Russian roulette mechanisms. Both systems ensure that people of our communities, the very place where our power resides and comes from, are disappeared. Both ensure that a very real fear is carried within each person going through the system at every moment, silencing them, making them invisible, unable to speak out against the injustices that they are subjected to. Ultimately, when refugees are forced underground in resistance to the inhumane action of deportation, they lose access to all social services and any remaining sense of security they might have had. Little is said about the arbitrary nature of the immigration system. Those contending with the system must not only struggle with the historically systemic racism that it's built upon, but also knowing that immigration officers and refugee board members can make individual decisions about arrests without warrants, detentions, and release conditions based on their own judgment. There are no actual limits to detention lengths written into immigration law. Like policing, there is a complete lack of accountability of immigration officials, and their work exists in a sea of secrecy. Detainees have virtually no rights. Where is the public outcry at these conditions that obviously go completely against human rights charters? Nigerian Michael Akinan died from absolute medical neglect on December 18, 1995, while being held at Celebrity Inn, an immigration holding center outside of Toronto. Shortly before his death, Akinan had written the following words to immigration officials: "I would rather die in Nigeria for a reason than waste away in detention in Canada when I had done nothing wrong." He died while lying in solitary confinement after multiple pleas for help went ignored and disbelieved. Before his death, he actually withdrew his refugee appeal to escape and put an end to the horrors of his detention. Where was any major outcry from the Canadian public then? And what about the outcry that actually has happened over the indefinite detentions of the security certificate detainees? Security certificates, reintroduced under the 2001 Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, have been a key piece of the post-9/11 climate. They rely heavily on an environment of racial profiling, anti-Muslim sentiment, and the hysteria-generating hunt for terrorists within our borders.
That's it for Starkraven this week, and you were just listening to Mandeep from No One Is Illegal. She was speaking at last week's Prison Justice Day rally in Vancouver. Tune in next Monday to Starkraven to hear about the climate of fear that's leading to the arrest and discrimination of many young Muslim men. We'll be bringing you voices from a public forum called Selling Security. Starkraven can be heard on Co-op Radio the first three Mondays of each month from 7 to 8 p.m., and you can also hear us live on the internet at coopradio.org. If you miss a live show, you can catch many of our interviews archived on prisonjustice.ca. We also have an email newsletter that's sent out once a month with information about upcoming shows and prison-related news. To sign up, email us at stark-raven@coopradio.org. Again, that's stark-raven@coopradio.org. And coming up next, you can hear Vancouver's hottest Aboriginal show. It's Think Indian. They're on from 8 till 9 p.m. But first, I've got a pair of tickets to give away for the Billy Bragg concert on September 29th at the Commodore Ballroom. All you have to do is call 604-684-7561 for these tickets. Again, that's 604-684-7561. 684-7561. And here's some Billy Bragg now. You are listening to Starkraven, Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.